it to my side and take it along with me.
Call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and that's me, boys and girls. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is the week after Mother's Day. That's right. It's May 16th. Thank you for joining in. I think we're going to have a really interesting show today. We're going to be talking about the recent dialogue on race that happened yesterday at City of Charlottesville with a lot of folks participating. And so much going on in this city these days. Thank you. A little quick change on the microphones and the headphones for me. Our guest today, let's fire things up and get everything rolling. Let's see. We have Brenda Lambert. Brenda, how are you?
I'm good.
A little closer, a little louder.
I'm doing very well today.
So much better. We also have Dion Lewis. Mr. Lewis?
Good morning.
And good morning to you, sir. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
The dialogue on race, an event that happened yesterday at the City of Charlottesville, both Ms. Lambert and Mr. Lewis on the Dialogue on Race Steering Committee, something that's been going on, I guess, planned for about a year now. Is that correct?
Actually, it has been in process for a couple of years. And what happened yesterday was the Action Forum, which is the start of a new phase of the Dialogue on Race.
All right, so it's been on for a couple years. Tell me,
yes.
In planning for a couple years. Tell me a little bit about, Ms. Lambert, how it got started.
Well, the impetus for the Dialogue on Race in Charlottesville started with City Councilor Holly Edwards. Right after she was elected, the City Council had a retreat, and they were each asked to set visions for what they wanted to happen while they were on City Council. And Councilor Edwards said that what she wanted to work on was race relations and race issues. And the other councilor supported her in this, and what came out of this was the Dialogue on Race. And this was about 2 years ago, and a 19-member steering committee was appointed, and we went from there.
How do you... And I'm going to say some really stupid things in the hour, because I find myself, when you get into a topic on this, that I always come across as being really naive, as being somewhat poorly informed. I say stupid things when you start talking about race and similar topics because of just I don't know any better. So if you're Councillor Holly Edwards and your vision is to have something according to the Dialogue on Race, how do the other four city councilors say, I think that's a waste of time, or I think that's a bad idea? I mean, aren't they, of course, going to say, excellent, good job, good job, good job, I like that?
Well, it's something that, and it's not a dumb or stupid question. I think it's an excellent question, considering the history of Charlottesville and the history of race relations in Charlottesville. You're absolutely correct, is that when this question was posed by Councilor, now Vice Mayor Holly Edwards, it was something that was, I would assume, immediately embraced, and thus the resources, both financial as well as manpower in regards to the steering committee were put towards it. It's something that we all need to understand. It's not just Charlottesville that experiences these type of instances. There are cities, communities throughout the country who are still dealing in the year 2010 with issues and involving race and disparities around race.
Wouldn't you say that, and this is a local event, correct? I know that there was some discussion between us, including Sean McCord, and who helped put this together, and Maurice Jones from the city, who also was a major player in the dialogue on race, and again in the discussion for the two of you to be nominated to come down today. Aren't all cities still suffering this, Dion? You made that sound like, well, Charlottesville falls in that category of cities that are still having problems with race.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't everybody raise their hand for that?
In America, yes. I'm sure that considering that our country is part of its foundation is around race, and in particular the disparity between those of African descent and European descent. And so, yes, I don't know what all cities throughout the country are experiencing, but I'm sure there are more cities that deal with problems of race or around race than there are not. And, you know, it's a great testament to Charlottesville as a city and the city councilors that we're making forthright efforts to make a change here.
All right, so Ms. Lambert, you, by the way, Dialogue on Race is our show topic today. The Dialogue on Race Action Forum took place yesterday in the city of Charlottesville. But this is something that's been planned for about 2 years,
right?
You said, correct?
Right. And the first phase of this was that we formed dialogue circles, study circles. And this involved getting together. 600 people came together in December. It was an amazing thing. We had 300 people show up on a snowy morning in early December, who were interested in getting involved in this. And we met for 6 weeks, 10 or 12 people. Well, it turned out to be more like 6 to 14 people met for 6 weeks in study circles to talk about this, to talk about race issues in these circles. And out of this came a better understanding of what these issues were. And in the last couple of meetings of these circles, people talked about what sort of actions they felt we could take to make things better in Charlottesville. And these action ideas were sent to the steering committee. There were hundreds of ideas that people came up with that they thought could be taken. What happened at the Action Forum yesterday was that these ideas were presented and people were able to go into groups divided by
subtitles.
Subtitles, mm-hmm. Right.
Like a subtitle, like what?
Education. Go ahead, Dion.
They were social, economic, education, government, and cultural. Thank you.
Right.
And cultural. And within each of those groups, we had each study circle was to come up with their top three choices of action ideas. And so what we did was have each one posted. If there was a cultural agenda item, we had them all in this subgroup yesterday. And what we did was we had the members who attended these groups yesterday vote. They voted on which action ideas would possibly or will come into play within the coming months here in the city of Charlottesville.
We are here on the Wake Up Call talking about the recent Dialogue on Race, an event that's been planned for the last couple of years through action committees, steering committees for suggestions as to ways to make race less of a negative issue, I guess, is that a good way to put it,
definitely,
here in the city of Charlottesville as a starter. And then yesterday, the Race Action Forum took place, and we have Dion Lewis, and Brenda Lambert, both from the University of Virginia. Not speaking for the University of Virginia, by the way. These are folks who were on the race steering committee as being selected to participate. What was the city's role? Did they do anything more than host things?
Actually, I am a retired employee of the University of Virginia, so I no longer have any connection to the university. I'm a city resident and retired.
Okay.
To answer your question, the city, under leadership of Maurice Jones, organized. They were the clearinghouse for information. All the information that came from the 49 action groups went to the city. We had the meetings were all organized by the city. Everything from space allocation to refreshments, the city handled. So in many regards, the city was responsible for all the logistical parts of it. Outside of also being the you know, the visionaries, you know, City Councilor Holly Edwards' vision is really much being put into practice by way of the city's leadership. Mayor Norris and all are very much in support and have been active in the process from its inception.
And at the same time, the city welcomed from the beginning participation from the wider community. Mm.
Now, here's a good question. You said the city looked for participation from what community?
From the wider community.
Now, are you
residents.
Spelling that W-I-D-E-R or W-H-I-T-E-R?
Stop and draw kicks in.
Because that's part of my question scheme. Is I'm sitting here, and I did a little bit of homework on this. The mission for the Dialogue on Race, to engage every segment of our community in an open, honest, ongoing discussion of race, racism, and diversity, and to identify problems and propose concrete solutions and paths to action that promote racial reconciliation, economic justice, and equity. So, you want to bring everybody together, all segments of the community, to talk about race. And what I find is that that is a taboo subject when you mix races together. How do you have this discussion without having political correctness overcome whatever size the discussion group?
It's it was a challenge, but it was a well wanted and warranted challenge.
Let me stop you right there, okay. And I apologize for this. We're sitting here talking about the Dialogue on Race. Rick Moore, host of the program, white. Dion Lewis, African American, Brenda Lambert, white, and in the background, hiding back there, Sean McCord, who participated in some of the early discussion groups, also white. So today's discussion, I would assume, is at least somewhat similar in the fact that we have at least two races here. So back to you, Mr. Lewis. How do you do this and not have it be clambered up by political correctness?
Excellent question. As part of the steering committee, we knew that we had to follow some type of format to yield the best results, and we were lucky enough to get a project manager and Gwen Whiting, who had done similar racial reconciliation projects throughout the country, and she guided us. She gave us a format to follow that included training first facilitators of the group and how to engage persons of different ethnicities, socioeconomic backgrounds, and that happened early on in the study circles. I was also a facilitator for one of the study circles, and the way that the 6-week process went is the first two or three sessions, you're really getting to know each other. You're breaking down some of those walls, and you're from the gate, you're putting things on the table that are not necessarily easily talked about. You're talking about your background. You're asked to explain situations that were uncomfortable for you, and so that you don't spend we wouldn't have spent the entire 6 weeks trying to get to know each other. It's really something that we try to conquer in the first session or so. And it was, I think that it's one of those things that you had to go through the experience to really understand how far we got in those 6 weeks. But again, and Brenda may want to add, from the first session, we were talking about issues revolving race and not necessarily the easy issues. You know, talk about, you know, a family member or if you've experienced something that was horrible from the first session, Brenda.
I think that's really true. And we tried, for one thing, the steering committee itself was 50% African American. It was about half and half, mm-hmm. which I think was a very good decision and not easily done, but was we also had two Latino members mm-hmm. of the steering committee. The racial makeup of all of the participants was about the same as the city population. It was about 20%, African American. We had two facilitators for each study group, and almost across the board, one was white, one was black. The facilitator training, as Dion pointed out, was done in a very good way, so that we were trained to be respectful, honest, and people were trained to talk about their experiences in a way that was allowed people to do this in a way that I think did break down barriers.
And Sean McCord here, because you participated not in yesterday's action forum, or did you? So you were there from the beginning as participant in one of the study circles?
That's right. I was in one of the study circles. And what I found, Rick, was that there was a real desire among people to talk about these issues because we don't talk about them. You've heard me say here before, I'm not originally from the South. I moved here from California. And it seems to be, you know, really the elephant in the room that we all kind of tiptoe around and we don't mention. And when brought into a room with people across an age spectrum and across the racial spectrum and say, these are the issues that we're here to talk about. And we had a format to follow. We literally had a book to work from that we went through week to week. And we were focused on particular areas of economic justice, church identity, mm-hmm. cultural identity, inequity, mm-hmm. And to be able to talk about these things that normally we're not allowed to talk about, there was a real desire among people to lay things on the table and be very candid about it. And I got to say, I was very proud of being a member of this community during those meetings.
We were glad to have you.
So one of the major parts of the mission was to identify the problems. We're here talking about the dialogue on race and sort of follow up on how we got there and yesterday's race dialogue on race action forum that took place Saturday the 15th. We do have two members of the steering committee with us, Dion Lewis, Brenda Lambert. Sean McCord is in the room as a participant from the early discussion groups and all the way through yesterday. What were some of the problems identified? Mr. Lewis?
Sure. There are a number, and I'll speak to some, and I'll allow Brenda to bring up some as well. One was the maybe, you know, the diversity training or lack of diversity training in the city police force. There's a understanding that if these police officers who more often than not are dealing with communities that don't from which they are not from, they don't necessarily know how to approach situations and students. So possibly adding or increasing diversity training for the police force. Another is the education. If there's a influence of diversity, not only in those who will be teaching, the educators, but also maybe in the curricula that can be added, whether it's extracurricular or also in the coursework, you know, something that we can, again, make suggestions to the superintendent and board of education to increase the the diversity, if you will, in the classroom as well as outside. And I think finally, in some regards to culture, more things at the university, more things that in Charlottesville that bring together the cultures in a way that you can learn from each other, but also appreciate each other. Maybe an increase in diverse performances at Friday After Five, things of that nature, or a cultural festival where you're bringing persons together to highlight and enhance their cultural experience.
I would like to add that, in addition to what Dion said about in the schools, we don't have enough black teachers and administrators. And there is a big achievement gap between black students and white students. We have in Charlottesville, which is by a lot of guys said to be the best community in the country to live, we have segregated neighborhoods, segregated churches, segregated social events. We'd like to change that. There are a lot of problems in the criminal justice system, in addition to having not enough black police officers. There are huge differences in racial differences in sentencing. There's racial profiling going on. We do need more black police officers. You just have to look around to see that, and that makes a big difference in how police officers are perceived in black neighborhoods. We don't have a very good promotion record of police officers, black police officers. There are also problems in African Americans have problems with the banking institutions and realtors. There are problems about what's called redlining in terms of where people can buy property, where people can rent. And I think those really need to be addressed. I think there are problems in every area that we looked at that can be addressed. One of the things that came up in the Action Forum yesterday that was not seen when we looked at action ideas that someone brought up at the end of the Action Forum was that health issues did not come up, but when someone brought it up, a majority of the people said, yes, this is something that has to be addressed, and I think that'll come out as one of the action ideas that people are going to want to work on.
11:21 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about the dialogue on race, all the way from when it started until yesterday and where it's going in the future. We do have Brenda Lambert, Dion Lewis, and Sean McCord is here with us as well. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Cloudy with scattered showers today, highs in the low 70s. Cloudy with showers likely after midnight tonight, upper 50s around the area, and then showers tomorrow. Highs in the lower 60s in Charlottesville and Richmond, in the upper 50s, Lynchburg and the Valley. Right now, there's a few clouds out there. 66 in the Valley, 69 in Lynchburg, 70 in Richmond, 70 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Oasis Audio for their support. Unfortunately, they are closing their doors forever. Through June, Blue Oasis is holding a clearance event with offers on everything in stock. If you've been waiting for the right time to purchase audio components, iPod players, or wireless audio systems for your home or business, then you're invited to Blue Oasis Audio in Carytown and Richmond and at blueoasisaudio.biz. And we also want to thank Petite Bebe, a children's and maternity boutique offering everything for babies, children up to 14, and for mothers-to-be. Petite Bebe carries sustainable products for kids, including strollers and car seats, clothing. They also offer a baby shower registry. That's Petite Bebe, 1st and Water Street in Charlottesville, open Monday through Fridays 10 to 6, Saturdays 10 to 5. Online, it's petitebebe.com. All right, back to our discussion on the dialogue on race. We talked about some of the problems that were listed. And it's always so easy to say, what's wrong? But there must have been some local success that was identified, I would hope.
Well, I mean, the fact of the number of participants that we had in the study circles is a success in many ways. To have close to 600 or 700 participants from the city who are saying, this is an issue, race relations is an issue, and I'd like to address it, is one of the immediate success. The fact that we have the city council and mayor behind it are a success. The fact that we were allowed into the school systems, Charlottesville school systems, to allow students to be a part of the dialogue process.
How did that happen? How did that work? You were allowed into the school system for, I guess it makes it sound like that's a surprise that you were allowed into the school system to do that. Why is that, and then how did it work?
Well, I don't think it's as much as a surprise as if it's more of having these students, these younger persons, also say these are issues that we recognize and we want to participate in. And so we did have study circles of high school students in particular who did it, who had what we were doing for our 6 weeks throughout their lunch period time. They were splitting their lunch periods down and also participating in the same dialogue. These students went through the same training that the, if you will, the adult facilitators went through for the full day, 8-hour training. And they also received the course books, and they went through the exact same format that we went through. And it was a success. They came out with their own suggestions about how we can improve race relations in the city.
Brenda Lambert and Dion Lewis here, both from the Dialogue on Race Steering Committee. Sean McCord with us, who was a full participant from start to recent finish. I'm sure that things will keep going. Brenda, you're saying they're shaking your head in a positive manner, both in terms of the school, I see, and is there something else that you found?
Well, I do think that the existence of the dialogue is can be considered a success. There have been other attempts like this over the last 50 years, but I think that the fact that we have moved to an action phase is very encouraging. I think that the other attempts have been, for one thing, have been started because of some incident, some problem. Something happened and people came together and said, we need to respond to this. And I think that the fact that this happened, this came together just because of people wanting to talk about long-standing issues and wanting to make things better in some more general way is a good thing. And I think the fact that we're moving into an action phase and people see the action phase as being something that, I mean, some of the action plans will be things that can be done immediately. Some will be things that will take some long period of time. Some of the changes will take a year, 2 years to put into place. But I don't think people will be put off by that. I think people are ready to be in this for the long haul. And I find that very encouraging.
979-0919 is a phone if you'd like to call and ask a question, give a comment as we talk about the dialogue on race with our three guests today. 979-0919 is the local number. Just because you need to use the toll-free number doesn't mean that you can't care. 1-877-WNRN Rocks. This is the dialogue on race that takes place in the city of Charlottesville, but certainly many of the topics and issues that go along with it take place all over. In fact, let's see. Hang on. We got a call. Everybody got their headphones on?
Yes.
Scott, you with me?
I am.
All right, Scott. Question, comment?
Yeah, I'll see if I can phrase this clearly. It seems to me like not only with race, but also with ethnicity and cultural issues, it's sometimes a hard balancing act between maintaining a cultural identity and also, on the flip side, not either dealing with or perpetuating stereotypes, or also recognizing that within any given community there's a range of different people within that community. So maintaining a cultural pride, but at the same time dealing with things that may be stereotypes. So it seems like that's often a hard balancing act.
Guest, somebody want to jump onto that?
Sure. this is Dion Lewis.
As you're thrown at it?
Yes, I'm thrown at it. Thank you for calling in, Scott. It is a difficult balancing act. I think that we tiptoe around issues around race and ethnicity, as you bring up, more often than not. I mean, as we all know, the way to conquer and overcome any situation is to approach it head on. This is a beginning stage, this being the dialogue on race. And as I mentioned a little earlier, some of these issues around race and ethnicity, it would be such a great training or experience for just persons in the greater community or even in the United States, because you're I won't say allowed, but you're kind of you're confronted with things very early on, and you have to both look inside to find the answers, but also see how your experience, your surroundings, those things which are familiar affect your mindset on race and ethnicity.
One of the things that we were talking very early on in the hour, dialogue on race here with our guests today, Brenda Lambert, Dion Lewis, Sean McCord, all participants in some manner. Dial up 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, and the phone lines are open. The discussion was the breakdown of those who participated. And some of the things that were discussed had to do with, what did I write down? Police diversity training. So the police, many people, or at least enough people said to make note of it, that the police could use a little more diversity training. That there was some problems with bankers and realtors in terms of, I guess, without picking on anybody, treating everyone fairly, or that may not be the best way to put it, coming across as though they treated everyone fairly for those who have to deal with them. It's not that they're treated unfairly. It's that the concern is there that I should put my money under the mattress because I don't know that I would be treated fairly. At what point do you move away from the group? Do you move away from the bankers or the police and move to the individuals who have these fears and concerns, some of which may not be accurate? Is that also part of the discussion, the dialogue, or is that an unnecessary part?
Well, I guess that's one of the things we have to figure out. One of the proposals that came out of several groups was that we form a board, a diversity board, to look at these concerns, so that if someone thinks that they might be being treated unfairly, they could come to this board and it could be examined. So that if someone thinks that maybe they have applied for a mortgage and they're being turned down because of their race, they're not being shown rental apartments widely enough because of their race, someone could say to them, "You're mistaken about this." That would be one way of dealing with this, and I think that's probably a good idea.
Mr. Lewis, Dion Lewis, I saw you nod your head, and you seem to have your little furrowed brow. Is that something? I mean, do you need to teach and train both sides of the equation?
To answer your first part, my answer would be yes. The other side is that you're talking about, it's also an issue of power. Those who have power, those who have this privilege, more often than not, do not necessarily have to come to the table with those who are disenfranchised. And so when that's there, it's I don't know how much training those persons who are at the lesser side of the disparity, what they will gain. I think we need to bring them all to the table. I think that that's part of what these study sessions did. They brought, we had business leaders and persons from the community together. But I'm here with a little angst because I'm just not sure, again, how much of the training would benefit those who don't have the power.
And I appreciate the answer. That's one of the reasons that we're having our dialogue here today is to spread the word a little bit more to those who couldn't or chose not to participate. Caller, hang on, 11:34 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about yesterday's dialogue on Race Action Forum and how we got to that here in the city of Charlottesville. We want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be on air today, presenting Mountain University every Saturday this month. You can learn about kayaking and camping, day hiking and hiking with kids. I would love to see day hiking. All classes are open to the public with no registration. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barrack Tread Shopping Center in Charlottesville and in Richmond at the Chesterfield Town Center, as well as on West Broad in Lexington Commons. All right, everybody got their headphones? And we got Gary from Albemarle County. Hey, Gary.
Hey, good morning. Good program there, Rick. And obviously very worthwhile. I'm impressed that 600 people got involved in this and that many of them have stayed with it. I'm a Scotch-American or a Norwegian-American, which makes me a 61-year-old white male, but I don't go around identifying myself as a hyphenated anything. I'm an American first. I've lived and worked in Africa, South America, and Asia, and the work I did was with low social economic groups, and I'm fluent in Spanish, okay? I would guess, like most anybody, I have prejudices. I probably have racial tendencies. I don't think it's because I'm white. I think it's because I'm a human being. What bothers me sometimes, though, is that we don't get specifics. I do appreciate that one of your guests mentioned that they were concerned about redlining and steering and a lack of promotions in the police department. But when these kind of examples are brought up, we don't hear that lender X or banker Y did this and that it went to an EEOC committee somewhere or somebody was charged or that Chief Longo was accused of not promoting enough black people or enough brown people or enough women. We just never seem to get the examples out there. One of the examples that was used this morning is that there are not enough black police officers, not enough black teachers. I was a teacher for years. I was on a school board here for years as well. There aren't enough black teachers even in the pipelines. What are these people going to do to encourage people to go to school to take a career in education, for example? And finally, you read the mission statement, and one of the things that caught my attention was there's a comment in there about economic justice. Could your panelists talk about specific examples of economic injustices in our community? And I'll just hang up and listen.
All right, man. Thanks, Gary. All right. Who wants to jump on that one? Gary always provides very interesting questions.
Thanks,
and
Gary.
Comments.
I'd like to I can start by addressing the this on one level. The city and the university have done recent studies showing that the distribution of African American employees is very high at entry-level positions and very low at managerial positions. And the university is not paying a living wage to these entry-level positions. the city does a little better at that. We'd like to see that change. I think that a quarter of the people living in public housing in Charlottesville are university employees, working full-time. These are people that are being supported by taxpayers. I think that we need to do something about that.
Is that Brenda Lambert here is a member of the Dialogue on Race Steering Committee, and you know, again, I'm waiting for me to say something stupid, but the pickup on what I imagine Gary to be thinking at the moment is if a quarter of the people living in what's the proper term? Supported housing.
Public housing.
Are university employees. Is that economic injustice, or is that educational injustice, or is that, you know, where do you identify that? Because it seems like there are so many places that you could, you know, the one stamp that you could put on that, or if you took the large number of people that probably breaks down to be, can you put one stamp on it? Because there are some people who are being paid too little for the work that they do. There are some who have those jobs that pay too little because they didn't get a good education, even though they went through the entire system. And there are some who didn't get a good education because they dropped out before going through the system, and so on and so forth.
I think that poverty and race are very tightly tied. I think that's something that was very clear from the whole dialogue on race. I think Dion would probably agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Not only are they tied, but one is the result of the other, and it's kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg. We have our communities, in particular we're talking about those in public housing, more often than not are persons who've not had some of the same exposures to the more affluent parts of the city, to educational opportunities, to resources that could change their current status, not only where they live, but also places to which they would be employed. They don't have the access to those places or access to the individuals who could give them that opportunity.
979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks 1141 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about the recent dialogue on race.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
With greater examination of the recent UVA lacrosse murder, The Hook goes beyond the tragedy. By including legal experts and psychiatrists and others, they ask what's next and how and why this could have ever happened. Friends and family of Chuck Lewis remember the self-made developer as a devoted family man and a visionary whose projects transformed the downtown mall. And if you're concerned about getting ahead in your career, a columnist argues the key is not to look for answers, but to ask the right questions. The Hook, backed by popular demand. And support for today's programming also comes from Been Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro, featuring male and female tattoo artists. Been Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Piercing is also available. Been Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro, or at 701 West Main Street in Charlottesville. For more information, it's beenaroundtattoos.com. And the man just walked in the room, Drew Thompson, up next at noon for Les Temps Perdue. And if French isn't your thing here at NRN, that means the time's gone by. And on our station, that's late 80s through 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next at noon. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Visual Light and Vinegar Hill Cinemas. Only on WNRN. All right, back in action with our guests today, Dion Lewis, Brenda Lambert, both on the steering committee of a dialogue on race. Sean McCord, participant from start to finish. Is this finished? What is the next step? There's a lot of other questions to do before we finish our hour, but it seemed like everything flowed into Saturday, May 15th. And here we are a day later, and where are we going now?
Well, we have a series of events coming. Yesterday's action forum was just that. It was to propose and introduce the actions to the community, both those who participated, but just the general community. From here on in, as I stated earlier, we voted yesterday on some of the top actions to undertake, and we'll be moving forward now with the action groups. The first one, it'll be in 2 weeks, and Brenda, you may have the schedule. I don't have it with me. I'm sorry. The first one I know is it's May 24th, and I want to say it's in regards to a government action item. Unfortunately, neither Brenda nor I have it with us today.
Can't you go online? Sean McCord knows everything about where to find stuff online. To go, the city of Charlottesville has a web page devoted to the dialogue on race. Yeah, correct?
They do. You go to charlottesville.org/dialogue.
Right.
As of late yesterday, they hadn't updated it.
Right, because yesterday was the day we decided which actions we were going to move forward on. So it may not be updated as of today, but I'm sure by tomorrow, sometime this week, it will be updated.
Give the city employees a good morning to get their things up, get
exactly.
their coffee in, and they'll start typing away.
But exactly. that does bring up a question for people. I mean, you said we've had 600 people from the beginning. We had several hundred people at the forum yesterday. But for people who are learning about this for the first time now, maybe via this radio show or some of the press coverage, and they're interested in becoming involved, are they excluded because they weren't in from the beginning? Or how can people get involved now that we're entering this next phase of the actions?
Actually, nobody is excluded from getting involved, even if they haven't been involved. If you would like to get involved, go to the city's website, look for the Dialogue on Race link, and look for the action groups that you would be interested in working on, and you can jump right in. There are going to be action groups in all these different areas, and we know that there are some people who were not interested in doing the study circles, who really feel like what they want to do is take action in one of these areas. Just come to the meetings. I think that probably what's going to happen is that there will be a large group of people wanting to work on education issues and a large group of people who want to work on cultural issues and economic issues. And these groups will probably break up into smaller groups. There'll be people who want to work on the achievement gap and people who want to work on real estate issues and people who want to work on smaller issues like this, four or five people, and they will get together and meet and get to work on making change. And we invite everybody in the community to jump in and help us make change in Charlottesville.
One thing I would add to that, Brenda, thank you, is the importance of registering. You can register either online if you have access to the internet, or you can stop by City Hall and register. And the reason why that is because you'll be put into a database, if you will, so that you'll be continuously updated either via snail mail or electronic communication on the activities. We understand that there'll be schedules set up, and you may not be able to make one event, but you can make another. So we really implore those who are interested to register again via the website or in person at City Hall.
Or you can just call the city manager's office and they'll take care of it through a phone call.
You know, Sean McCord mentioned the recent media information that's been put out there. I looked through my Sunday Daily Progress and saw nothing. And yesterday's event was at least the recent culmination of nearly 2 years worth of work, 600 more people to an event that took place from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. So it's not like there was a deadline that could have been missed. And while there might have been something in the Daily Progress, it certainly wasn't anywhere that you could easily find it. It wasn't on the front page of any of the various sections. I flipped through, you know, all the sections to look, and I didn't see anything. So when your local area newspaper does not participate, What do you do? How, you know, what do you say about that in terms of action actually taking place?
Well, you come onto the wake-up call and talk about it.
That's right. We're rocking here.
We're very disappointed to hear that. I'm sorry that the Daily Progress did not cover this. We do appreciate you having us on the show today, and I think some calls to the Daily Progress are in order.
Yeah. One thing is, as a steering committee, we understand that we've had to become our own best ambassadors for the project, and we've not only spoken in professional or personal settings, but also recruited those persons who we interact with to participate. That's not to say that the local periodical newspaper should not be involved. It's just saying that we understand that the support for the majority support for this event and advertisement marketing, if you will, has been coming from the steering committee members.
I'm going to go home and find somebody with a big newspaper on my front doorstep in a circle where put your glasses on before you look through the paper. But seriously, I did not see that. And I find it disturbing that something that the city put so much effort into, because if I remember correctly, back in August of just this past year, there was some discussion about where the money was going to come from to pay for this. And it, I don't think it was any sort of grueling discussion that took months and months, but it was, you know, was it $30,000? It was a fair amount of money to be put forth, and I guess the end discussion or indecision was, it's more than worth it. It's an important topic that needs to be had, and let's pay for it. But then to find that your local newspaper, whose front page is all about another very important topic, and that everyone seems to be covering these days, and university events. But there's no space devoted to the dialogue on race. 979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks. 11:51 on the wake up call. Dion Lewis, Brenda Lambert, Sean McCord, all participants on the dialogue on race. Brenda and Dion from the steering committee. I had this statement made to me before as I was discussing with someone what this week's show is. I think I have this quoted properly. Some people say discussing the past is complaining, talking about massive resistance, slavery, and previous unbiased, I'm going to screw this up. Some days discussing the past is complaining and prevents unbiased discussing of present day. Others say understanding the past is necessary for the present and future. When you had the smaller groups, and we mentioned this early on, about how you get through the political correctness, where do you start with that? I mean, is there discussion about how slavery and massive resistance and being in the state of Virginia is what put us here?
Each group, and like I said, I had one group, Group 29. I hope you all are doing well and listening. Each group was different, and there was no two formulas that were exactly the same. I can assure you of that. But what I can tell you is that we asked each other those questions. We asked each other those same. You had group members who wanted to learn more about their present state of being. And we had some group members who actually felt that, well, we should move beyond these discussions. Have we not come this far? To just move forward. And some said, well, no, we've got to understand our past. We've got to really, you know, have some discussion about, you know, what, you know, my time as a 5-year-old meant compared to your time as a 5-year-old, my time being a person of African descent and your time being a person of European descent. And I think what came out of that is that we've got a lot to learn about each other first. We've got a lot to learn about each other in the context of Charlottesville, and more importantly, as members of citizens of the United States of America, and what that means and how that shapes our cultural, our social, our ethnic identity in order to move forward. So the starting point is actually here and now, where I am here and now compared to where you are here and now, and where we must learn about each other and from each other in order to move forward.
Sean, you were on one of the groups, and as someone who wasn't a member from the steering committee, but one of those 600 people who volunteered. I'm curious to know how your particular group went.
It was a very eye-opening experience, Rick. You know, I came into it thinking that, you know, I had learned about the civil rights struggle in school, and we have a black president now, right? So all these issues are just, you know, they're in the past, and can't we move beyond them? I have and have had a great deal of sympathy for that issue, because after all, I'm fair, I'm unbiased, I'm not prejudiced. Nobody I know treats people differently, but experience really counts. How you grow up, how you've been treated when you were a child, affects how you see things now and makes you see things differently. I was in a group with a couple of gentlemen who were older than me, but not that much older than me, maybe 10, 12 years, African-American gentlemen, both of whom had been in the armed services. And one of the fellows in the group who's a local reverend now said that when he was in the Army, it didn't matter what level of education you had when you got into the Army. If you were black, you drove a truck. It didn't matter whether you were a high school dropout, a high school graduate, or, in his case, had a couple of years of college. First day that you show up, your job is to drive a truck over there. And I think, okay, well, all right, that's the military, you know, but that's different than ordinary life. But then he talked about getting out of the military and going to work for the post office and finding the same lines of demarcation there. If you walked in the door and you were black, you were given a certain kind of job. Oh, go work with those fellows over there. And with that experience, walking around the university where I work and looking at who it is that's working in the cafeteria that's cleaning up and serving the food and who it is that's managing the people who are cleaning up and serving the food, you realize the same demarcations are right there. It's right in front of us all the time, and you just don't see it. And I talked about my family, my immigrant experience. Like Gary, I'm of Scotch-Norwegian descent, and I can, you know, trace back to my great-grandfather who came here from Scotland and with nothing, literally with nothing, and bought a farm in Minnesota and raised a family. And my own dad was in the service, but I realized that, you know, at every point along the way, my ancestors, the people I came from, they were white, mm-hmm. and they were given breaks even if we didn't realize it at the time. You know, my father was able to go to a bank and get a loan and buy a house and give me a middle class existence that you know, other people. Dion, I don't know your family experience here, but so much of race, which is really kind of an artificial construct. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's no mm-hmm. difference between you and I. We come mm-hmm. from the same gene pool, but we look different. And because we look different, we're treated different, but we also perceive ourselves to be different. And I think that was probably the most important experience for people on the ground at my level who were just participating in this dialogue and talking to people, is to have our eyes opened up a little bit to that experience and try to appreciate where people are coming from and how that fashions where they are now.
11:57 here on the Wake Up Call as we are finishing up our dialogue on race, which I can tell based on the number of questions still on my list we'll have to have a little further on in the year. Dion Lewis and Brenda Lambert from the steering committee, Sean McCord, a participant as he just identified as on the ground, one of the 600 folks who participated in the early discussions. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting us today. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Real quick, as we finish up our last minute and a half, how did the university and the county of Albemarle participate in this, if any?
I think it was It was a couple of things. One, you had many of university participants in regards to employees, some students, both undergrad and graduates in that regards. And you have, I can't speak necessarily to the county. Do you know much about the county?
We had several people from the county on the steering committee and participating in the dialogues.
So it was viewed as, while the city of Charlottesville was the host, they recognized that people who live just across the city lines are still vital
part of the community.
Folks absolutely. In the community yes. and in the discussion.
Yes.
And I might add that the university has its own project, University Community Action for Racial Equity. It's called U Cares, and it's being sponsored by the Institute for Environmental Negotiation. And so it's a similar project, and actually we're going to have a joint meeting soon.
Yes.
The Dialogue Steering Committee and the university community.
Yeah. And I would like to say that although I didn't have such kind things to say about the university in terms of employment and living wage, that the university brings a lot of very bright and caring people to Charlottesville like Dion, and they increase our chances of solving some of these problems.
Well, and the university is a vital player. And while I know that Sean did a show while I was out of town on the university's living wage, they still pay a heck of a lot more than many of our other folks in the area. All right, Brenda, Dion, Sean, thank you so much for participating today.
Thank you.
I think
thank
we can certainly do this again later in the year. In fact, we need to do this later again in the year. Brenda Lambert, Dion Lewis, Sean McCord. Everybody, Drew Thompson up next. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.